from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 3. And we'll cover two verses, 18 and 19. These verses are from the listing of the incarnations of Lord Vishnu, or forms of the Lord as they appear within this world, following the questions that were asked by the sages, one of which was, please describe these forms. So here in Canto 1 as well as in Chapter 2, without elaboration, just they're mentioned. And in some cases, Prabhupada doesn't even present purports, although later in the Bhagavatam there's several chapters. Like this first one, text 18 is about Lord Nrisimhadeva. There's no purport. The translation reads, in the 14th incarnation, the Lord appeared as Nrisimha and bifurcated the strong body of the atheist Hiranyakashipu with his nails, just as a carpenter pierces cane. No purport. So, in ISKCON, we're thoroughly familiar with the pastime. Who is Lord Nrisimhadeva? Why he appears? Who is Prahlad? Who is Hiranyakashipu? And so on. The remark about Lord Nrisimhadeva's appearance mentioned in the verse is that the body of Hiranyakashipu was super strong. It was invincible. He was so strong. And yet, with the nails of the Lord, he bifurcated his body, this strong body, just as a carpenter pierces cane. So that's a cultural context. Carpenters piercing cane. For a carpenter to pierce cane, apparently it's like easy. They have their tools. Cane may be hard, but not at all hard, impenetrable by our carpenter's tools. That's one little hammer and nail, or hammer and chisel, and it splits. So similarly, as powerful as Hiranyakashipu was, it was nothing for Lord Nrisimhadeva to finish him. Although for others he was invincible. He was invincible in part on his own strength. He was also invincible because of the benediction that Lord Brahma had given him. Other than this most amazing form of the Lord, half man, half lion form of the Lord, he was invincible by the power and protection of the benediction of Lord Brahma. Similarly, the next incarnation, Lord Vamana, Bali had become practically invincible. I'll read the verse and the one sentence purport. In the 15th incarnation, the Lord assumed the form of a dwarf Brahmana Vamana and visited the arena of sacrifice arranged by Maharaj Bali. Although at heart he was willing to regain the kingdom of the three planetary systems, he simply asked for a donation of three steps of land. Prabhupada's purport is, the Almighty God can bestow upon anyone the kingdom of the universe from a very small beginning. And similarly, he can take away the kingdom of the universe on the plea of begging a small piece of land. So, going back, the part of this that we don't hear so much about is how it came to be that Vaman appeared. So, in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, there's a detailed description of a big battle between the demigods and Bali Maharaj. In that description, Bali Maharaj is defeated. He's not only defeated, literally he's killed. He's dead. But Shukracharya, descendant of Bhrigu Muni, was so qualified that he brought him back to life. And he engaged Bali Maharaj in a Vishvajit Yajna, a very special Yajna that produced from the sacrificial fire a golden chariot with all types of celestial weapons, and the grandfather of Bali Maharaj came to be present at the Yajna, and he presented a very special garland. I forget how it's described. It's like a celestial garland, meaning like, you know, a garland that never wilts. And was for protection. Never wilts, very fragrant, and offered him protection. And Bali Maharaj then took the opportunity to regain the kingdom that he was attempting to conquer previously. When Bali Maharaj approached the kingdom of Indra and was fighting on the outskirts of his royal kingdom, Indra went to Bhrigu, said what to do. He hasn't seen anyone so powerful as Bali Maharaj ever before. And Bhrigu informed him that Bali Maharaj has received special powers by the Brahmanas, and you won't be able to defeat him. So better that you vacate your kingdom, vacate the palace, and make yourself invisible, because otherwise he'll find you and destroy you. So Indra took that advice, and he was told it's only the personality of Godhead who can rescue from Bali's strength. So Indra approached, he left, and they approached Lord Vishnu, who consented to make his appearance. Meanwhile, the father and mother of Vamana, later to be born as Vamana, Aditi was in the hermitage or the residence of the ashram of her husband, and he was engaged in meditation for a long period of time, absorbed. And when he came out of his meditation and came back to the ashram, he saw the place was deserted. And he saw his wife in a terribly disturbed condition, so he inquired what happened. And she explained everything. And she asked her husband for a solution. What can be done to help my son regain his kingdom? And Kashyapa was not interested in helping her find a way to get her son to get his kingdom back. Or their son, his son too. So he instructed her in transcendental knowledge about be concerned with what is eternal, not what is temporary, and so on. And good advice, but she couldn't hear it. She asked again, can you please make some arrangement or tell me how it can be achieved that my son can get his kingdom back? And so he provided her with a means for that, a certain very, very austere penance. Payo Vrata is the description or term. It is a 20-day or something like that observance. Very, very, must be very strictly done, very severe. And if it's done properly, then the personality of Godhead will be pleased, and if he's pleased, then whatever you wish to attain is possible. So she listened very carefully and asked questions and how to do, and then she did very carefully. The similar thing happens in the sixth canto, where Diti wants sons, anyway, sons who will be able to Aditi performed the Payavrata, and at the end of the Payavrata, Lord Vishnu appeared and presented himself before Aditi, saying, you have pleased me very much, and Kashyapa has satisfied me perfectly well. I know what it is that you want. You want some means by which your son can regain his kingdom, and that will be possible only through myself, so I will appear as your son, and I will do that myself personally. So she was very happy. And she engaged herself after this Payavrata and the appearance of the Lord in serving her husband very, very nicely. And in his meditations, Kashyapa could understand that Lord Vishnu was in his heart and was soon going to appear as their child. And he informed Aditi accordingly, and Vamana was born as their son. So we hear this description. He's a dwarf Brahmana, and so he was the son of Kashyapa and Aditi, Kashyapa being a qualified Brahmana. And his stature was very small. The description is in the 8th canto of the Bhagavatam, where Vamana, his beauty, his charm. But, you know, the opulences of Vishnu, the opulences of Bhagavan were manifested within him. And so while he was still very small, because not only he was a dwarf, but he was still quite young, dwarf Brahmin boy, at this stage he appeared at one of the yajnas that Bali Maharaj was having done. Going back, Bali, having regained the kingdom, was engaged by Shukracharya and his followers in performing 100 Ashvamedha yajnas, just as Indra had done his 100. So Bali, now in the new post, became as powerful of a controller as Indra, and an invincible soldier. So only by the mercy of the Personality of Godhead could this be done. But with the translation, Here's what the purport says. The Almighty God can bestow upon anyone the kingdom of the universe from a very small beginning, and similarly, he can take away the kingdom of the universe on the plea of begging for a small piece of land. In the second canto, when the list of incarnations is described, the comment is made that one may be the rightful administrator, but he cannot usurp the property, the rightful property of another without begging. So that's a rule for kings. So it's Indra as the king had to fight, but Bali was invincible. Indra was extremely powerful in fighting and quite heroic, but Bali was invincible, and Prabhu told him that. So the alternative, now that Bali had gained the kingdom by military conquest, how to get the kingdom back from an invincible Personality. So the point is that an appropriate means, a brahmana asking charity. When the Personality of Godhead appears, with the exception of Krishna, Personality of Godhead appears in a brahmana or a kshatriya family. Krishna appeared in the family of cowherds, unique. Vamana appeared in a brahmana family. And as a brahmana, he requested charity. The message in the verse for this morning is, at heart, he was willing to regain the kingdom of the three planetary systems. That's what he wanted. But he simply asked for 3 paces of land, because he's the Supreme Lord whose paces can cover the three planetary systems. In Brihat Bhagavatamrita, when Narada visits Indralok, he was sent to Indralok by a king from South India who was told by Narada, or told to Narada, that he was the greatest recipient of the mercy of the Supreme Lord because his kingdom was so opulent and so on. But the king said, compared to King Indra, my kingdom is nothing. You should go to see Indra. So when he went to see Indra, the opulence of the heavenly realm, and the king of heaven is described in astounding in his opulence. And not only his kingdom is opulent, but in Indra's kingdom, Vamana resides, because Vamana is the younger brother of Indra. And as a Brahmana, he was being, you could say, maintained, but actually he was being worshipped. And Narada saw, when he came to Indra Loka, he saw Indra intimately worshipping Vamana. And after the worship was completed, Vamana got up and left. And Narada came running forward to Indra. "Oh, Indra, you're the greatest recipient of the mercy of the Lord." And described the various ways that he saw that he was receiving so much mercy. And Indra said, "No. I certainly, as there's good fortune that Vamana is residing here, but it's only for some period, and then he goes away, and then I'm bereft of his association. And moreover, how humiliating was the circumstance? Here I am, the king of heaven, and rather than in other incarnations where the Lord fights to destroy the opposition and give his protection in that way, he came as a cheater. He tricked Bali. He didn't just like soundly defeat him in a righteous fight. He just tricked him. He doesn't consider me worthy of that kind of protection. He did this other thing." "You should go see the Pandavas. They are really receiving the mercy of Krishna." And unlike with Vamana, where he's here some of the time that he's gone, with the Pandavas, he's the constant companion. So the one sentence purport that Prabhupada presents about Vamanadeva is our lesson to be understood as Krishna can give to an insignificant person who has next to nothing. He can give the kingdom of the universe if he wishes. He can also take the kingdom of the universe away if he wishes. And he can do so practically effortlessly, as effortlessly as taking two steps. Everything that one has is gone if he wants to. And in the case of Bali, it was both to satisfy his devotee Indra, but also to glorify Bali. Bali was such a surrendered personality that when everything was taken away, even his own dignity was taken away, he was fully surrendered unto the personality of Godhead. He wanted to show the world, this is Bali. It may look like Bali's a daitya, but he's like his grandfather. He's a great devotee. So he agreed to be his gatekeeper. "I'll stand at your door and guard you so that no one can harm you." the Lord likes to serve his surrendered devotees. Krishna did like that with the Pandavas also. But it's one of the qualities of the personality of God, and it shows itself in this pastime of the Lord appearing as Vamana Dev. So I'll end there, see if you want to discuss anything.
Many times, like technically, like the demigods and the demons are defined as like the devotees and the non-devotees respectively. But like in the context of this particular pastime, you can see that and Pali Maharaj is a pure devotee, while Indra is like a mixed kind of a devotee. So is it like this is an exceptional case, or like
yes,
there are many?
He is referred to as a daitya, which means a descendant of Diti. So the descendant, the sons of Diti were the rule, not the exception. But Prahlad was an exception, and Bali was an exception. And there were exceptions following the same line because of the qualification of Prahlad. They became benedicted. So daityas often are equated with the demons, but more specifically, daitya means the descendant of Diti, and demon means to oppose to the personality of Godhead. As Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita, there's a class of persons who never, there's a class of persons who surrender, the class of persons who never surrender. Those who never surrender, there's four categories, but they never surrender. And that's that position of not surrender, that's the demons, which is not the position of Bali.
Guru Maharaj, how did Bali Maharaj achieve such a high position of surrender without connection to the disciplic succession? It's just an exceptional case.
There must have been something. His connection was through his grandfather, Prahlad.
Okay.
And it was, you know, like not like they didn't talk. Or didn't have any association. Prahlad instructed him, as in Prahlad instructed whoever he was in contact with, so he instructed his grandson, who received that mercy.
Is there any significance to the dwarf stature of Vamanadeva? It's very intriguing.
Yeah, it is. That's just, you know, to magnify the glories of the Lord. A dwarf means he has short legs. And three paces of land for someone who has short legs, not even normal legs, just short legs. But with two legs, he covered the universe. He's not dependent upon having, you know, a normal height, and then it's more realistic that he can cover the universe. It's like, you know, Krishna's lifting Govardhan Hill with the little finger of his left hand. Not only his left hand instead of his right hand, but his the little finger of his left hand. Brahman was a dwarf Brahman. Not only a young Brahman boy, but a dwarf young Brahman boy. Three paces of that. Anything else?
Maharaj, is it okay to submit a question off topic? I was wondering, when we consider the mentor-mentee relationship or superior-dependent relationship, is there room for disagreement or difference of opinion? Like, can the mentee see differently? Not the principles of the scriptures, but maybe the way how the scriptures should be applied, or should the mentee's desires and thought should be completely in alignment with the mentor? Because the natures are different and there may be different ways of seeing things. Is the relationship same as a spiritual master relationship?
The answer to that question is no. But the former question, I would say if there is some, through the course of dialogue, there's something that's fundamental, that's like of difference, that should be presented to the spiritual master. That's an area that one should be cautious about. If there's something that a mentor is, because, you know, what the mentor role is not is a managing role. The business of the mentor is not to manage the life of their mentee. So, rather, the mentor's role is to guide, and the guiding principles that they apply are the guiding principles that they know from their spiritual master. Now, how, in which principles should be applied, in which way, in which case, that's a brahminical function. And is it possible that there can be differences amongst brahmanas? And certainly. But a mentor, their consciousness is, my service here is to be an instrument, not to be, you know, a controller. I'm doing some service for my spiritual master, and my business in doing my service for my spiritual master is to be transparent representative, where he in this circumstance, this is how he would, you know, best of my understanding. And can there be differences about that? Yeah. It's like during Prabhupada's time, he didn't have formal mentors, but he did have DBCs and sannyasis, and his interest was that along with the managerial function that a DBC member would perform, they would act as Prabhupada would act on Prabhupada's behalf in circumstances to help devotees. As Prabhupada trained them, they in turn would train others so that he could do the service of translating.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't formalize it, but the principle was like that. So the spiritual care was a function that he expected. And supposing there's, you know, a situation like you described, is it possible? Sure, it's possible. And then they would take that to Prabhupada. But on the matter of spiritual care, it's quite different than a managerial issue. In Kerala?
Where I grew up.
Okay.
There is an annual festival called Onam where every year all the people, they believe in Bali Maharaj, who was the ruler of the whole planet and this whole pastime.
Whole universe. Okay.
And then that particular day we decorate the whole home, assuming that Bali Maharaj is going to come back and see if all the citizens are doing okay. And because during his kingdom, the kingdom was flourishing. So just wondering if there is a Krishna conscious connection, or is it just...
Doesn't sound like it. But it's maybe more like, a benevolent king, and respecting the principle of honoring the principle of a qualified and benevolent king. A qualified and benevolent king is thinking of the welfare of his subjects. So it's a reminder that we should honor those who are taking responsibility for others in a, you know, very careful way. Seems like, you know, it's more of a varnashram principle of a quality of a king as opposed to a Krishna conscious thing.
I wanted to ask, when other devotees go through some struggle or Krishna takes away something from their life, especially when it comes to one's spiritual seniors.
Especially when it comes to
one's spiritual seniors, like spiritual authorities, like guides or mentors.
What do you mean? Like when Bhakti Tirtha Swami disappears, when someone Krishna takes away? That's what you're speaking?
Like losing a job or something.
Losing a job or something.
So how should we take
that? When Krishna takes away. Krishna has a relationship with them, and they have a relationship with Krishna. And it's between them and Krishna. Krishna's not, you know, dropping them down a shaft. There's a relationship. And it's, you know, their relationship. Whatever it is that Krishna may be wanting to do. Make them more dependent, or, you know, redirect them to some other circumstance that's, you know, very nice and suitable. So Krishna is making some arrangements that may look like you know, what it may look like and what it is could be very different. Do you have something?
Yes, Guru Maharaj. I wanted to understand, where do the demons actually live? Like, what are the planets of the demons? Or are they always competing with the demigods for their planets? And
well, like, Bali Maharaj was given one of the lower planetary regions to rule, Suthala. And Vamana became his gatekeeper. Some of them live in Texas. So yeah, they have their residential places. It's not necessarily fixed. There's not some area where, as in Swargaloka, where the demigods are situated, then there's a designated region. Specifically. Yeah.